Hello, and welcome to the AVOD. I am the Dive Mistress.
And I'm Count Vargelon.
And on today's show, we're going to be discussing the TV show Fringe, as well as gore-related topics.
Because who doesn't love gore?
I don't know. I can't think of a single person who doesn't love gore.
You've heard it here first from our poll of two people. 100% of the world's population loves gore.
It's sore. It's true.
So, first off, let's look at Fringe, which came back from its little election-caused hiatus this week.
Yes, it did. Well, last week.
Oh, you're right, last week. But last week's episode was so remarkably dull that I have already forgotten every detail of it.
No, that was the one 3 weeks ago.
That was the one 3 weeks ago. Okay, wait, what
Yes.
happened 3 weeks ago?
Not a lot.
Okay.
Because I don't remember. But I do remember watching it.
You
And
remember
thinking it
that
was,
you
I
watched
remember
it.
that I watched it. And I thought to myself while watching it that this is really boring. I should probably just turn it off. No, I can't do that. I have to finish watching this show.
Because of your love of Joshua Jackson.
Yes, that's exactly why. Hey, did you know that I ran into him on the street once?
I did not know that.
Although I didn't know it at the time.
Okay.
I was walking down the street,
In Toronto, I
talking
assume.
in Toronto, yes, on Queen West, talking to a friend of mine, not paying attention to what's going on around me, which is pretty normal. And she's not paying attention to me because she's too focused on the person who's coming at us in the other direction.
Okay.
And then we passed by him, and then I realized that she hasn't heard a word that I just said. I was like, "Do you know who that was?" I'm like, "No." She's like, "Joshua Jackson," and he had this look on his face like, "Don't talk to me, don't talk to me, don't talk to me."
Oh,
Oh,
that's so
but I
sad.
didn't talk to him, and
Aww.
I think that we made his day just a little bit better.
I gotta say, that is very similar to my only celebrity walking by on the street story, in
Oh,
which,
really?
yes, me and someone I was extraing with were standing in line waiting to get our costumes, and a really tiny man walked by. Who I kind of recognized, but didn't really, know who it was. And then she's like, "Do you know who that was?" To which I respond, "No, but he looked familiar. It was Mike Myers."
Oh, he's tiny, isn't
Who's
he?
very short. Like, I don't
Oh.
know why I didn't know that, because come to think of it, you look at the movie Wayne's World, and I believe he was towered over by Ed O'Neill.
I don't remember.
Well, I remember he was towered over by Ed O'Neill in that film, and that he was shorter
But I think
than
that's only
Rob
because he was
Lowe,
sitting
who is
down and Anil was standing up.
that too. But if you remember, he's also shorter than Rob Lowe, who's a famously short actor.
He is
He
not so famous that
is.
I don't know about it.
Okay, let's see. So the one that was so boring that we don't remember it oddly involved exploding heads.
What are we talking about a show again?
We are talking about Fringe, yes.
And not famous short actors.
No, well, that was my only famous short actor story, so I've
Oh,
moved
okay.
on.
My bad. I'm sorry.
No, Fringe, the episode that was so boring we couldn't deal or remember it, was the
An
one that opened
exploding
with
head?
people having their head explode in a diner at the beginning.
Oh, yeah!
Yeah.
See? That was cool!
It, and you'd think the rest of that episode was going to be awesome. And then it was among the most boring things I've ever seen. And Chris Eigeman, beloved actor Chris Eigeman, played the villain.
Okay, if you
You have
say
no
so.
idea who that is.
I
That's
don't know who you're talking about.
totally fine. He was on Malcolm in the Middle for a while and Gilmore Girls,
I don't
The
watch
Last
those
Days of
shows.
Disco Barcelona.
Nope.
I'm gonna stop talking about this guy.
You probably should. It's for the
Probably should
best,
stop talking
really.
about Chris Eigeman. Yes, and
Yes.
the new episode was called In Which We Meet Mr. Jones. So apparently a character called Mr. Jones appeared in this
Oops.
week's last week's episode.
Mr.
Mr.
Jones.
Jones.
Why do I have such a hard time processing this show?
Because it's a very dull show.
Well, I know. I don't know if that's true. This one episode is extremely boring.
I do have a theory about it, actually. Would you like to hear my theory? Because it's longer than a normal show, your mind is processed to only remember 42 minutes per episode of an American television show. Because it's 50, because you get confused.
I don't think that's it.
You don't think that's it? You got to admit that as theories go, that's a pretty good theory.
It's a pretty good theory. However, I'm going to go more with the too much to process, like too much story to process, as opposed to just it being too long.
Oh, okay. Yeah, except
like they cram a lot of stuff in there, and it suffers a bit from the X-Files syndrome.
In what way?
They're trying to get, you know, a lot of story crammed into their 50 minutes, which is cool. I got no problems with that, but their story is so huge and convoluted that it's impossible to put all those pieces together in a single episode. So when you've got like five different conspiracies going off in all directions, you can't put them all in one episode like that. You got to give it time to play out.
Oh,
so you
okay.
need to create like a number of different story arcs that carry over a number of different episodes instead of having all the story arcs in every episode.
The main fact that I've already gotten bored just listening to you talk about Fringe, I think establishes what my problem with Fringe is. It's like every single episode of that show, all I keep thinking is, why am I not more entertained by this? Because I feel like it has all the elements that should be entertaining me. You know, mad science, kooky, you know, pseudoscience, contraptions, a guy who talks to cows. It should be fun. But it's also plodding. Ugh.
I know. Also, another problem. Well, I don't know if this is a problem. It's just something that irritates me. Is that in every episode, all the events take place in a single day.
Yeah. It's got CSI Miami syndrome.
It was so possible. There just aren't enough hours in the day.
Especially, and I mean, on CSI Miami, it's really noticeable how awful that is. But you're right. It's pretty bad on Fringe, too.
But for some strange reason, though, you can forgive CSI Miami.
Oh, I don't.
Oh, okay. I do. But
I have written many articles that are about me not forgiving CSI Miami.
I got over it.
Okay.
Basically, it happened when I realized exactly what the show was about.
So you're saying on the alien planet where that show is set, they actually have 39-hour days?
That's not set on an alien planet. It's set in the future.
Yes, but my episode explains the way they're able to, you know, get DNA tests done on the same day that they found blood.
Because it's in the future. It just works that fast.
Okay. Also, that they apparently don't need warrants for anything ever.
No, because it's the future.
In the future, there are no warrants. Because it's all a police state.
That's exactly right. David Caruso in charge.
And I've got to say, the other thing about Fringe that, you know, bugs me a little is that the lead actress always looks like she's about 3 seconds away from breaking into tears.
I know. See, this is, and that is the problem with Alias.
Yes.
Lighten up. I mean, come on, it won't kill you to crack a smile. Enjoy your life, such as it is.
J.J. Abrams loves that, because they're both J.J. Abrams shows.
That's true, they are.
And he loves it, apparently, when women cry.
He likes to make girls cry, I think is what you're trying to say.
I was trying to say that in a more diplomatic and creepier way. Seriously, though, like, so if there's two themes that run through every J.J. Abrams situation, it's problems with your father and women crying. Mm-hmm.
It says a little too much about Abrams, I think.
It really does.
More than I care to know.
If you watch Lost, and I'm sure we'll get back to this when Lost comes back in January, but everyone I know who watches Lost and I loved pointing out on that show was that as they got into everyone's backstory, the one theme in everyone's backstory is that apparently everyone on that plane has huge daddy issues.
Wow, convenient. They were all together on the same plane.
Well, I think that the daddy issues were what protected them when the plane crashed.
Oh, really?
Isn't that all that makes sense?
I only saw the first season.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I'm one of those people who should have stopped watching. Everyone I know stopped watching by the end of season two and in season three when just nothing had happened for two seasons. And then in season four, it was just nonstop things happening. And I had to tell everyone, no, you have to start watching again. And I'll make up this list for the website because I essentially made a list. Well, I told people a list. I never wrote it down, which I should have, of the six episodes you actually have to watch between the beginning of season two and the end of season three to get you caught up.
You're the person who keeps track of this stuff for the rest of us who are too lazy to do anything about it.
Well, it's not that you're too lazy. It's that, honestly, so much crap happened that went nowhere that you shouldn't have to watch two seasons of terrible Lost to be able to get back in to season four of good Lost.
Yeah, okay. I'm
not going to say great Lost, although it did have a character who I'm very fond of get teleported to a desert and then use kung fu to beat up some Bedouins.
Ooh, who is that?
That would be a character you haven't met yet.
Oh.
Yeah.
Never mind then.
Yeah, the guy who was the pre-filer on the inside. This all means nothing to you.
No idea what you just said.
I know. I was talking. The Prefiler was the best ever episode of The Inside, this show about serial killers, which normally I hate. And, you know, I often hate shows, but it was being created by, he worked on a lot of Tim Minear. He worked on a lot of Joss Whedon shows. A guy named Tim Minear, who's very entertaining. Yeah. He created this show, and there was one episode where it wasn't even a good episode. It was half of a good episode where the premise was a guy who was really clever and worked at the post office had, based on the stuff people mail ordered, figured out who was likely going to become a serial killer or commit mass murders. Then he started stalking them and broke into their houses to make sure, and then he murdered them in whatever way they had planned to kill people.
That's amazing.
Isn't that a great premise?
Yeah.
So he was killing guys before they started killing people.
I'd get behind that.
Oh, I know. But then the episode was remarkably judgmental against him, and it threw away, you know, the fascinating story of this guy halfway through to be about him taunting the cops with who he was going to kill next and daring them to try and protect this guy and keep him from killing him. And it was awkward as hell.
Aw, that's unfortunate.
And, like, the thing is, I would honestly, and this is where I'm just wrong as a person, I'm like, I would rather watch a show about the Prefiler than this show. It would be like, what if Dexter was good and interesting?
Don't say a word against Dexter!
All right, we will table the Dexter discussion for another day when you can tell me why I'm wrong about Dexter the way I'm wrong about everything else. Is that fair?
I don't know why.
But do we have any idea what this week's Fringe is about? Did you watch the next week on Fringe?
Oh, maybe. Once again, I don't know why. This stuff won't stick in my head. No, actually, I don't think I did last week.
Oh, if there even was.
But I hope it's exciting and it moves the story forward a bit, because I think that's what happened last week on Fringe. They moved the story. It was kind of going nowhere for a while.
Yeah, it really kind of just sat there. And then I honestly did
festered.
Like. Ouch.
You know, harsh. Well,
I don't know. It's like, this is the first, you know, supernatural mystery they've had in a while where I was actually, now that's interesting. There's a giant monster sucking on that guy's heart.
Yeah, it was cool, right?
Like, I'm sorry, bus full of gel? Not that interesting.
The bus full of gel was all right. I liked
underground torpedo?
Yeah. Because it added, like, a little bit of intrigue, because here's this guy who, like, just sort of hangs out and watches this stuff happen,
right.
And he's somehow directly related to underground torpedo. That was interesting, because it was mysterious.
I like that they had the Watcher from Marvel Comics show up to observe creepy stuff that happens, but the creepy stuff he was observing, an underground torpedo, I didn't find that interesting.
But what about the guy who, like, would torture people to find out where the underground torpedo was and then kill them?
Had they done anything really with that, that would have been great, but then they didn't.
Yeah. I kind of forgot about that part.
You forgot about the part that it all ended rather anticlimactically.
It all tanked.
Yeah, well, you know.
You just shut off when I got, you know, to the climax and then, okay, good show.
But honestly, yeah. I just
about the decline in the last 5 minutes.
If they, I'm not saying they have to replace the lead or something. She's fine. It's just, if she would just seem less like she's on the verge of tears, that's all I need.
I know.
It's like, I can't watch Cold Case because, honestly, I can't watch it because of that woman's haircut.
Yes, because you said, and I quote, she looks like a strung out Michelle Pfeiffer.
No, I said that she looks like, she looks like Meg Ryan playing a survivor of spousal abuse.
My bad. I'm sorry. I was close, though.
You were close, though. But you got to admit, that's exactly what she looks like. And it's so distracting for me. I've never been able to get through an episode of that show.
Because you just can't get around her haircut.
No. And the weird part is, it's the exact look she had in terrible film Mindhunters.
Mm. You are right about that.
Oh, Mindhunters.
That's a terrible film.
The film where they got the concept of profiling confused the with the concept of knowing the future.
Well, you can see how you could get confused.
No, you can get confused with that. Absolutely. No, because
it's a fine line.
Someone in a life or death situation being stalked by a serial killer who is exploiting your weaknesses. Then when you found a randomly magically showed up pack of cigarettes, even though you already know someone's out there exploiting your weaknesses to murder all of you, you would smoke them.
Of course. Of course you would.
Well, I was doing research for this Lifetime movie that I'm trying to write. And here was the premise. Okay, in this terrible Lifetime movie. So a woman is a con artist, and she has just used drugs to drug a mob guy and steal diamonds from him. And now she's talking to her partner and pissed off that, you know, he set her up to rob a mob guy, because now the mob's going to be after them. So he says, all right, we can part ways. I'm not offended with you, instead of wanting to continue doing cons, taking half the diamonds and going away. Here, to settle the dissolution of our arrangement, why don't you take this drink I am offering you? And the thing is,
this is the movie you wrote.
This is not the movie I wrote. This is the movie I was watching for research.
Oh,
so then she switches. She's like, I'm suspicious with you. I will switch glasses with you. But then when it looks like she's ready to switch, he's ready to drink it, she switches back because he thought he might have outthought me. Like, it's the frigging Princess Bride. And she's Wallace Shawn.
Oh, he just didn't poison both drinks.
And but more to the point, here's my question. Okay. In that situation, here's another plan. Don't drink.
Don't drink? Yeah.
Like, you owe this man nothing, but just by pretending to switch, you've demonstrated that you don't trust him. So why not just not drink?
I guess that wasn't an option.
It was an option, you know, though.
It comments on her character. Maybe she can never refuse a drink offered to her. She's an alcoholic. Now she's got depth.
None of those things you just said were true.
Oh.
Sorry to disappoint you about this film.
This film that I haven't seen in Dover.
Something Cleaverville, Carverville, something like that. I'm trying to remember the title, although the title is not important. But anyway, then, and here's the best part. He leaves her unconscious in the apartment and phones the mob to say, hey, you know that person who just stole those diamonds? Here's where they are. To which I think, so you didn't kill her? So now you're hoping that the mob will show up and shoot her without asking A, where the diamonds are, or B, if she had any partners.
Yeah, I guess so.
That was not a very well thought out plan on her partner's behalf. Which, thankfully, the guy does by, you know, seeing a bunch of pillows under a bed and shooting under a mattress. Sorry, under a blanket on a mattress and shooting them, as people in television are wont to do, while the woman slips out the back. But my question is, why wouldn't you ask the person where the diamonds were? Because all you've done by shooting them while they sleep was made that much more work for yourself, because now you've got to dig through their apartment and find the diamonds.
I don't know. I don't have any answers for you. I'm not a mobster, nor am I a con artist. I don't steal diamonds on the weekend.
You are, yeah, but you're not a mob. You're not a mobster. You're not a con artist, but you are a hack screenwriter. So perhaps,
Ouch!
What was I doing? No, seriously though, it did show me just how low the bar was though, and that felt good. Knowing how low the bar was. But I think if there's one thing that we have gotten about, gotten out of this conversation of the show Fringe, it's that we both, find the show Fringe so dull that it's hard to talk about it for more than 1 minute at a time.
This is also true.
Although the fact that I'm a jerk seems to be one of the message of all of our conversations, as opposed to just this
it's
one.
It's important that I get that out there.
And since now you want to point out me being a jerk, why don't you tell the people at home, the viewers at home, about the movie I made you watch?
Oh, yes.
But first off, I'll explain. The movie I wanted her to watch was something called Jumper. But before we started the show last time, I had also talked about this other movie I found out about, and she'll get to the title of that in a minute, and she misunderstood and thought that was the one she was supposed to watch this week instead of Jumper. So for those of you who are excited about our discussion of the film Jumper, that's going to be pushed back. Please, okay. Dive Mistress, explain.
To be fair, I watched both movies, and it was your decision, Fable Jumper, for a late episode.
Because at the time of record, you had not finished watching Jumper.
Well, it takes time sometimes to get through a movie, especially when you have a lot of other things to be doing
so
instead.
Let's move past judgment, and you can talk about this movie.
Moving right along, the one movie I did, in fact, watch in its entirety is a little film called Blood and Sex Nightmare. And the title really says it all. It is full of blood and sex, and it is nightmarishly bad. And I'm a little offended and embarrassed. And my soul died just a little bit after watching this movie. It was a chore. It was a real chore. I nearly turned it off. But
and it was only 58 minutes long.
It was only 58 minutes.
Counting the credits.
But I watched the whole thing for you.
So did I. And I've got to say, here's my, would you like my capsule comment on the film Blood and Sex Nightmare?
Well, maybe first explain,
Oda, we'll get into the plot in a second,
why we watched it.
Here is a, my capsule comment of the film Blood and Sex Nightmare that I realized about halfway through, which is, it seems to be built to cater to a fetish that I didn't know existed. And I never want to meet someone who has this fetish. And that fetish is, I would like to be watching pornography, but I don't want to turn off this slasher film. Or, conversely, I would like to be watching a slasher film, but I don't want to turn off this pornography. And I don't know how big the Venn diagram is, the people to create that fetish in the middle of the porn fans and the slasher fans, where they cross over the point that the two can never be separated, like a magician's rings Venn diagram. But I've got to say,
Wow. The worst part is,
yes,
it's neither good porn nor it's a good slasher.
No.
It's awfulness coming at you from all sides.
I think if anything else, it goes to prove that as long as you, A, have access to a set of isolated cabins, and B, know people who work in a strip club, you can make a movie.
That's true. That is very true.
Because they certainly were able to get strippers out to those isolated cabins to make their movie, which, now that I've said that, can be the premise of a movie we make. That someone got strippers out to an isolated cabin. Be a terrible movie.
What should we call
it? I have an idea for what we could call it, actually.
I'd love to hear it.
Naked and Violent.
Oh! Soul! And note. Note that we put the new first. We know how to get it.
Okay, full disclosure time. The only reason that I made the Dive Mistress watch Blood and Sex Nightmare is because for years we've been working on a script called Naked and Violent, the, let's face it, parody film about people going off into the woods and getting murdered by a slasher. And after years and years and years of absolutely no progress on getting it made as a film, I happened to be in the video store one day.
Writing it down.
Exactly. I happened to go to the video store one day and saw a film called Blood and Sex Nightmare. And I was so amazed by the existence of a film who, at least titularly, was similar to ours, if not concept or execution, that I had to watch it and I had to make her watch it. And that's the story of how we, people who should never have seen Blood and Sex Nightmare, saw the film Blood and Sex Nightmare. Interestingly, other people who belong to the group, people who should never see Blood and Sex Nightmare, include everyone on Earth.
It's a big group.
It is a large group.
You left out one sort of important part of the story.
Please.
What really caught your attention more than just the title was the cover art.
Oh, yes. Which by now, if you got the link to this AVOD off of Count Vargelon, Castle Vargelon, vargelon.blogspot.com, you will have seen the cover art because that is the absolutely disturbing picture that is attached to the post linking to this AVOD. It's upsetting.
Does that moment occur in film, in the movie?
No, nothing like that happens in the film, because I think all of the strippers who were willing to get naked and tied up for the movie were smart enough to demand that they not get naked and tied up outside. Which, you know...
No, one of them gets naked outside.
But she doesn't get tied up outside.
And get tied up. No, the one that gets tied up is inside.
Exactly.
That's true.
I can't believe we are able to discuss the specific points of bondage and nudity vis-a-vis its location in the film Blood and Sex Nightmare.
Oh my God.
Seriously, it was a film. Yeah. It was a film without a redeeming point.
Not a single one.
No, nothing. It's a film that posits that a woman who was nervous about losing her virginity to her boyfriend would go to a sex retreat with him.
Well, because, you know, that's all virgins like to go to sex retreats. It's a well-known fact.
Also positing the theory that a sex retreat would consist of nothing but a bunch of isolated cabins. Like, I was trying to figure out in what way was this a sex retreat.
I know, there's nothing romantic or erotic about that place.
Look, it's a tiny, disheveled white cabin with a double bed. Yay.
And seriously, all this stuff that's going on in that sex retreat, I don't know why I need to go out into the woods to do that.
I know, like, all they were doing were taking nude photos or, in one case, disturbing tranny play acting.
Yes.
Yeah, there's
all that shit at home.
A long sequence in the movie where they pornographically play out a fake 50s sitcom, which would be disturbing enough.
It was really odd.
It was really odd, and it goes on for way too long, and the, I guess, director or the editor or whoever decided to put on a fake laugh track. So it was just, it was unsettling. Oh, I've got it. Okay, I'll give it this. That whole sequence was more effective at unsettling me than the fake incest-themed borderline pornographic sitcom sequence from Natural Born Killers.
Oh, I don't really remember that part of Natural Born Killers.
Rodney Dangerfield plays her child molesting father.
Okay, I don't remember a lot about that movie.
Okay.
I could see it again.
Yeah, I only watched it the one time, but I remember it pretty well.
No, it didn't. The scene didn't unsettle me. When it started, I was kind of wondering what the hell is going on. And then it kept going. I'm like, oh, all right. Well, I guess I'll just go with it. And then, then it ended. Thank God. And that was pretty much it. That's, you know.
Yeah, I don't understand why there were Japanese ghosts.
Well, no, because the ghost explains that.
Oh, sorry.
Thankfully. I guess you missed that part.
Let's just recap the plot quickly. A woman comes home from her father's funeral in Japan.
Right.
Her boyfriend badgers her into going to a sex retreat despite the fact that she is a virgin. At the sex retreat, they are accosted in an incredibly suspicious way by a creepy old man who claims to be the groundskeeper. In a random sequence of unrelated events, a bunch of nude women get murdered in disgusting ways.
As do fully clad men.
As do fully clad men. A number of fully clad men. Only the women get nude. Thank heavens for small favors. Sorry, I'm terrible.
There's a really, really horrible castration scene.
Yeah, there is.
That was actually really disgusting.
Yeah, and unusually, even by the standards of castration scenes.
Yeah, like, it might have been the worst that I've ever seen. Not that I watched a lot of castration.
Apparently so. Which you referenced on your blog post about the movie.
I did, yes.
Mm. So then, all of these people get killed without anyone noticing, and the random people who also witness these crimes don't bother to phone the police. So the ghost of a child, a molested child who loved to rape and murder women, is free to run around, kidnap the virgin in an attempt to make himself reborn by masturbating blood onto her from his disturbing stunt penis.
That was very gross. Actually, I thought the end part.
Yeah, the whole ending of the film was well beyond the pale.
And like,
even for a film entitled Blood and Sex Nightmare.
I know. But it's just being like kind of misogynistic.
I really questioned the use of kinda there.
Maybe I'll rephrase. That movie was misogynistic.
Unbelievably misogynistic, I'd say.
Really? I don't know. Okay, I do know how it got made.
Yeah. A guy knew a bunch of strippers. That's how it got made.
I don't know how it ended up in
stores. I've said it before and I'll say it again, which is the genius of the film Naked and Violent. If you make a movie that features both blood and naked breasts in it, you will get distribution. It won't be good distribution, but it will be distribution.
Okay.
Like, I'm not saying you're going to get in theaters or in Blockbuster or anything like that, but you will be a real film on a real DVD with real box art that people can buy, either from, you know, like a video store with a wide selection or off the internet.
Which like, video store were you in where you saw this?
I was at HMV.
Oh my God.
It was at HMV. Now, it's possible that it's because it was, you know, near Halloween, but it was in a real video store.
I've been to the Rogers numerous times and perused the shelves and have picked up many a straight to DVD box and put it back on the shelf because the copy was so bad that I couldn't rent the movie.
Yeah, the back copy is very dire most of the time.
It'll have an amazing, you know, art piece on the front.
Yeah.
Like a font and their ridiculous title. And I'll be like, awesome! Let's read the back! And it's just such a turnoff.
Well, the thing that I never understand is...
poor sentence structures.
Yeah, like, you have no one at the office who speaks English?
It's called a spell check, people.
Well, no. Find me a find me a program that doesn't also have a grammar check.
You know, it's an it's. Don't apostrophize your plurals.
Oh,
it's
my
that,
God.
It's that simple.
Yeah, it's just,
so anyway.
It's inexcusable, I think, is the point we're trying to get across, how bad these movies are, but they all get distribution, which is why I'm very excited about the prospect of doing Naked and Violent. And I gotta say, this film has re-energized me about the prospect of making Naked and Violent.
Well, because what little we have of Naked and Violent is already so much better.
I know. Again, bar very low.
I mean, A, the title to begin with. I already said it. Naked first, and then violent.
Okay, you got to put the nudity first. You really do. But more important than that, I think the fact that naked and violent, I think it says something very bad about us. I mean, just as human beings who supposedly care about and want to do things, that the people responsible for the film Blood and Sex Nightmare, you know, had more wherewithal to actually go out and make a movie than we do. Because, you know, watching that film, I sit there and I want to just have complete contempt for the people responsible for it, but for everything they did wrong, by which I mean everything. For everything they did wrong, for every moment of that movie, they actually went out and made a movie. As bad as it is, and it is bad, they've actually made a movie. I don't have anything that clocks in over 40 minutes.
I don't have anything at all. All I do is sit around and complain about this.
You know, I got a short film, and I got 15-minute cartoons, but that's all I have.
I have an IOU for $50.
You do. Thanks for bringing that up on the AVOD.
Hey, no problem.
Very professional.
I don't want you to forget about it.
I won't forget that I owe you $50. Thank you. But it's nice of you to bring it up. So anyway, finally, Blood and Sex Nightmare. God awful. But it seems to have motivated us to get off our rears and kept working on Naked and Violent. So we will be finished that script within, I'm going to say, 3 months.
Okay.
There, I'm laying it down. 12 AVODs from now, we're going to have a completed script on our hands.
Complete script. Wow. Maybe we'll even treat everyone at home to a direct reading.
Ooh.
A little bit of a preview.
A preview of the film Naked and Violent. Which, now that the trailer guy is dead, I might have to do the trailer for. In a forest untouched by man for millennia, 10 teens go out into the woods.
Don't talk like that.
No,
makes me add a little.
Okay. Yes, the trailer guy died. It's very sad for all and for all encountered. Happened like last year? No, not last year. It did happen this year.
It couldn't have been last year.
No, it happened this year.
Who's doing the voice now?
There's like three guys. It's just he was the In a World guy.
Stop it.
All right. I will stop doing my fake version of the trailer voice guy. No, it's true. My only talent really lies in 1920s newsreel narrator. If you'll permit me. Dateline, Chicago, 1932. There. See? That's basically all I can do.
Okay, so now we're going to move on to the countdown. And this week we're counting down the 50 essential gore films. And these are in chronological order. We're going to see how many of these 50 we've seen. And you too can count in along with us.
Okay, I've got a pen and a piece of paper ready. Let them rip.
Okay, 1963, Blood Feast.
No idea what that is.
Shall I read a little bit of it for you?
I would like to find out what that is.
Okay. There is no definitive first gore film. The use of gory special effects to shock viewers goes back at least as far as Luis Buñuel and Salvador Dali's Un Chien Andalou.
Every time with that sliced eyeball.
I know.
People just love talking about it.
However, it can be said that this campy and surprisingly bloody slasher is the first significant gore film.
So it sounds like definitely something I should check out.
That's what it sounds like, yeah.
Well, because of my love of history. And crude effects.
I know, they are the best.
Oh, the best effects are cheap ones. Okay, what's next?
Okay, 1969, Night of the Bloody Apes.
No.
1970, I Drink Your Blood.
That's a good title, but no.
1971, A Bay of Blood.
I have seen that because it is also known as Twitch of the Death Nerve. Correct?
It doesn't say that here.
Oh, okay. But I'm pretty sure that's Mario Bava.
It is, yes.
It is, yes. And well done. It is famous, thank you, for being the film that Friday the 13th Part 2 ripped off a kill from, in which a couple are having sex and then both are stabbed simultaneously with a spear.
I should have sounded in the first one.
I guarantee that's in the second one.
Because I remember seeing someone get stabbed with a spear having sex in the first movie.
First movie after sex, Kevin Bacon gets an arrow through the throat from underneath.
Oh.
If you're thinking of anything, that's what you're thinking of.
That is what I'm thinking of. Because normally what I'm thinking of usually involves Kevin Bacon.
And I'm assuming nudity and stabbing.
Of course. What?
I wanted to make you sound as unpleasant as possible. I feel I've succeeded.
Okay. Moving right along.
Please do.
1975. Criminally Insane.
No.
It has a sequel.
Oh, okay.
Called Crazy Fat Ethel 2.
I've heard of Crazy Fat Ethel 2. It was one of those movies that was on the that was always on the video store shelf. And I'm like, wow, should I rent that? Can it be as good as the title? And I never did, so I never found out.
Apparently, it's spectacularly awful.
Oh, then I guess it wasn't as good as the title.
I guess not.
Good to know.
76, okay. Blood-Sucking Freaks.
Everybody knows the title, but I've never seen it.
No, me neither. Apparently, it is so distasteful that even distributor Lloyd Kaufman distances himself from this movie.
Wow.
So that's got to be bad.
Yeah, he made Romeo and Juliet.
Yes, he did.
And just really unsettling movies. I talk about Romeo and Juliet, of course, because it was written by James Gunn, who I hate.
More on that later.
More on that in upcoming weeks.
1977.
Okay.
The Last House on Dead End Street.
The first three words, I thought I was going to know that, but then no.
I know. Yeah, through you. Me too.
Okay. What is it? This one I'm curious about.
Oh, you want to know. Okay. Due to a history of small distribution, no other film on this list carries the cult cachet of this one. Ooh. An angry ex-con filmmaker turns to making snuff because nobody is interested in sex anymore. Not much remarkable happens beyond a gruesome disembowelment set piece and a scene featuring a man forced to fillet a severed deer's hoof. But the director nevertheless crafts a compelling and scuzzy cinema verite sex and death netherworld inspired in part by the crimes of the Manson family.
Oh, I have a question.
Okay.
Is all of the magazine Rue Morgue this impossibly pretentious?
No.
Oh, okay. So it's just this article.
It's just this article is impossibly pretentious.
Then please continue.
Okay. 78, Faces of Death.
I am actually extremely proud of the fact that I have never seen that.
I've seen Muppet Faces of Death.
No, you haven't.
No, I have.
What is Muppet Faces of Death?
Google it, and you can see for yourself. It's actually really disturbing. It's just dead Muppets. Isn't that quite horrifying? You know what? You shouldn't watch it.
No, I shouldn't.
Nobody should. No one should ever see that. I don't know why I just told you to do that.
Yeah, I'm and sorry. Now you've given people something to Google. What were you thinking?
Bad.
All right, then. As long as you've admitted you're in the wrong, we can continue.
1979, Beyond the Darkness.
Nope.
1980, City of the Living Dead.
Actually, I'm kind of ashamed I haven't seen this one, because you know I love zombie movies, and...
I know you do.
Yeah, that one's just embarrassing.
Oh, and it takes us in a town called Dunwich.
Really?
Yeah.
Much like the Dunwich horror.
Exactly, except it's spelled with one N in this case.
And no W.
Yeah, there is a W, but you're not supposed to pronounce it. Well, you're not supposed to pronounce the W.
I always thought you... I thought it was the Dunwich horror.
I know, me too. I was corrected.
Oh, now I'm sad.
Well,
I've been saying it wrong all these years. Thanks for passing it along, though. I appreciate that.
No problem.
Okay, what's next?
Next, 1980, Cannibal Holocaust.
Oh, of course, yeah.
I haven't seen this one.
Yeah, you might want to avoid it. It really is as unsettling as they say.
Well, I've read about it, and reading about it is quite unsettling.
Well, I think
I could turn it into a good paper, like a good essay.
Okay, that's
for
fair.
For my anthropology class.
I think we'll it might be better for your anthropophagy class. What the hell is wrong with me?
I'm going to go with...
Why did I do that voice?
I don't know. I don't know.
It's like, I think that anytime I make a delicious pun, it has to be in that voice. That is the voice that makes delicious puns. Okay. Seriously, though. Yeah, it's true what everybody says about it. If you can't see animals being hurt, you know, no, don't watch it. But more importantly, if you want to see something that's like the Blair Witch Project, only it has teeth, then yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Well,
you know,
we'll see.
If it doesn't suck for the entire running time, then that would be the place to go. Apparently, okay. I still haven't gotten over hating the Blair Witch Project.
I guess not.
We're learning a lot about me tonight.
We are.
Okay.
1980. Again, a big year for gore movies. Contamination.
No, the name's not familiar.
Okay, 1980, Maniac.
Of course, Maniac. And do you know what Maniac is famous for?
Wait. I don't know.
Okay. Well, Tom Savini,
Tom Savini,
gore master, is in it, and he plays
head.
Himself. Oh, okay. So you have heard this story.
I just read it.
Oh, okay. But hey, I once again knew it was in the magazine. No, but it is a really disgusting effect. He plays a character in the movie, and he points the villain points a shotgun at his head and blows the head off of Tom Savini.
Aww.
In a gore effect Tom Savini made. So I think it was pretty neat.
That's awesome.
It's It's surprisingly awesome.
I love Tom Savini.
Yeah, he's pretty great.
He is.
Okay, so I'm up to three. How are you doing?
Talk about that later. I think I'm at zero. I'm holding steady at zero.
You've been there for a while.
I know. Well, okay, let's continue.
Okay.
1980, Night of the Demon. This I want to see.
What is this?
A university professor takes an anthropology class into the mountains to search for the mythical Bigfoot.
That sounds amazing.
Campfire tales of deadly Sasquatch encounters are recounted in flashback. A sordid backstory presages a bloody climax in which Bigfoot whips people with loops of their own intestines. Whoa!
Okay, how have I not seen that? Night of the Demon?
Night of the Demon.
All right, I'm checking that one out. Okay.
Okay, 1980. Zombie Holocaust.
No.
Nope. 1981, Burial Ground.
Yes. Also incredibly famous, this time for a scene of dwarf incest.
Ugh.
Yeah. There's this, I think it maybe is supposed to be a child, but it's clearly like a 40-year-old dwarf playing a child who is way too interested in the fact that his mother is dating someone.
God. Yeah,
tries to make out with his mother, then he gets turned into a zombie and bites away at her chest. It's very unsettling.
Okay. I don't need to see that.
And has a fantastic ending where it ends on one of the oddest cliffhangers in history because they're like, oh no, what's going to happen? All of the zombies are pushing this guy's head into a circular saw, and then like the movie stops when his head is 2 inches away from the circular saw, and it honestly feels like the end of a cliffhanger. Like, how's Doug gonna get out of this one? But it's just a splatter movie, so I left wondering, why didn't they just show his head getting cut open with a circular saw?
I guess they want to leave it up to your imagination,
which is so much worse than any gore effect.
Exactly.
That's not even slightly true, though.
I know.
I'm not any good at imagining gore effects.
Anything at all.
Hey, watch it. All right, I'm up to four.
Okay. 1981, Nightmare.
Okay, no.
No. 1981, Cannibal Ferox.
Yes, Cannibal Ferox. Okay.
Another anthropology student. Man.
There are a lot of anthropology students in cannibal movies, and there are always...
Seriously?
Well, it's more ironic if you study cannibals that then a cannibal eats you.
More ironic?
It's more ironic than just if a regular person gets eaten by a cannibal. Of course, in that film, it's extra ironic because she was going to South America specifically to prove that there was no such thing as cannibals.
Cannibals, yeah.
Yeah, which, by the way, since everyone knows that cannibals really exist, is one of the stupidest things someone has ever gone to South America to try to prove. And in the stupidest scene in the world, the woman then goes back to civilization and gives a speech about how cannibals aren't real, and all of her friends died in a canoe accident.
Okay.
I've spoiled the ending. Be grateful.
1982. Yes. Basket Case.
Basket Case. Famous video cover, but I've never seen it.
I think this is one we should see.
Oh, definitely. And it's famous mostly because the video cover is just like It's Alive's video cover.
Yeah.
You know, with the hand in the basket instead of the hand in the
pram.
Seriously, pram? You don't live in England anymore. Did you use the word lift today?
I rode in the lift today.
Oh my God, I can't believe you just said lift. Your Anglophilization disgusts me.
Shut up. Okay. 1982. Pieces.
Pieces. Oh, that's a classic. It's a wonderful movie about a man trying to make a like perfect woman by cutting off various parts of, you know, young women at the college where
co-eds.
Yes, young co-eds. Thank you. But the best thing about the movie is that there's a scene where a woman and the weird part is it's odd to describe anything in one of these films as realistic, but where a woman is chainsaw massacred, and I've got to say the most realistic way possible, which is she's out there reading and, studying because, again, co-ed, and this guy comes up with a chainsaw dressed as like a workman, and she's like, hey, do you need me to move? And he's like, no, it's fine if you stay there. And then he pretends to cut the tree. And then when she looks away, he attacks her with the chainsaw.
Oh, that's pretty good.
I'm like, you know what? I bet that would work.
Yeah, it would. It totally would.
Because I've always had the problems in movies with chainsaw attacks that it's like, the second you hear someone going through the arduous process of revving up a chainsaw, why aren't you, like, so
running
far
away.
Gone? Exactly. But here, he's got a perfectly good reason to have a chainsaw.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so that's my sixth movie on the list. My reminiscences of the movie Pieces.
1983, The Deadly Spawn.
I have no idea what that is.
A monster kid relies on his knowledge of classic horror films to stop an invasion of flesh-eating parasites from outer space.
He's a monster kid?
That's what it says.
Okay, well, I've never...
Apparently, it's an hilariously bloody throwback to the science fiction films of the 50s.
Oh, that sounds like fun, but I've never heard of it.
No, me neither. Okay, 1983, Seeding of a Ghost.
That sounds really unpleasant, but I haven't heard of it either.
Chinese, it looks like.
That would explain the crazy title.
A woman has a falling out with her lover, who leaves her stranded on a country road, and she's attacked and raped by a pair of young miscreants.
Oh my god.
And then plunges to her death.
Ah. And then she comes back and murders them?
Someone digs up her corpse, black magic.
Ooh.
Impregnated with the seed of her rapist? What? Simultaneously, the lover's wife becomes pregnant and gives premature birth during a family gathering to a tentacle monster that immediately attacks everyone.
I am never watching this movie.
Are you sure?
Yes. I am so sure. I have never been more sure of anything.
Okay.
Wow.
Okay, 1985. Day of the Dead.
Well, okay, yeah, obviously.
1985, Phenomena.
Never seen it, but I do regret that.
Okay. This 85/88. Guinea Pig, Flowers of Flesh and Blood, / Mermaid in a Manhole.
Really happy I've never seen a Guinea Pig movie.
Really?
Yeah, those are the...
It's like a badge of honor, having never seen one.
I really do feel it that way. I mean, those are the fake snuff films from Japan, right?
Yeah, the ones that Charlie Sheen got all worked up about.
Oh, Charlie Sheen. You went to some weird parties in the 80s.
Hey, he was just trying to help. Go easy with Charlie Sheen.
He was a really... But I'm just saying, it was probably a very disturbing party that they were watching a guinea pig movie at it.
Well, it might have just been on in the background.
Okay. Again, that's an interesting party if you got a guinea pig movie on in the background.
1986.
Yes.
Lucker the Necrophagus.
I know what that means, but I've never seen the film.
1987. Necromantic.
Title rings a bell, but no.
Compelling and utterly revolting ode to necrophilia.
Hey, you can stop there.
Okay. 1988. The Dead Next Door.
Yes. The famous J.R. Buchwalter movie that he made on his own over like 5 years, and halfway through production, Sam Raimi found out about it and picked up the bill for the rest of the movie. Which led to when they had to dub over all the voices, Bruce Campbell doing one of the voices.
Oh, now I have to see it.
Yeah, you really should. Campbell. It's a very fun movie.
88. Henry, yes. Portrait of a Serial Killer.
Well, of course.
Again, haven't seen it. I haven't seen anything yet.
You really? You're doing terrible on this.
I know, this is horrible. 88 again. Men Behind the Sun.
No. That's another cannibal one, right?
Let me see. Everyone's passage through puberty should include witnessing intestinal tracts expelled through assholes.
Who the hell is writing this?
It's not important.
Okay.
1988. Faceless.
Faceless. Ooh, I like the sound of that. I don't, actually.
It's prolific Spanish director Jesse Franco's best film.
I thought it was Jess Franco.
My bad. Jess Franco.
Yeah, because it's short for Jesus.
Anyway, you haven't seen it, I think okay. is the point.
That is an excellent point you just made.
Yeah. 89. Baby Blood.
Ooh. Keep going.
Don't think too hard about it.
It's just, it sounded familiar. Keep going.
Intruder, also 1989.
I have seen Intruder. That's, I think, Scott Spiegel is his name. Yep. College chum of the Coen brothers and, again, Sam Raimi. That is his movie. And famously, the severed head speech from Raising Arizona is repeated in this film by a different character.
Huh.
Ah.
Cool.
Although this time it actually involves a severed head because it's a splatter film.
1990. Luther the Geek.
No, nothing.
1990. Nightmare Concert.
Nope.
1991. Riccio, The Story of Ricky.
Everybody has heard of The Story of Ricky, but I've never seen the story.
I have seen part of this one. Yes. Yes.
Part of it?
Yeah. The part where this one guy punches the other guy, like, right through the chest.
So
his hand comes out the other side.
A shot from this movie.
It's like, you know, like in 2 minutes.
Okay. That was a long punch.
Well, you know, you got to build up to something like that.
No, you absolutely do. And I am not trying to belittle your experience. Absolutely. You have seen part of the movie. I'll give you two.
Yes, I have.
I'll give you that one.
1992, Dead Alive.
Well, yeah, everybody's
seen
Dead Alive.
Yes, okay. All right. I'm on the board with...
You are on the board with one and a half.
1992, Violent Shit 2.
Well, I'm a little surprised that Violent Shit 1 didn't get on that list.
Have you seen it?
No. But
then you don't know.
I don't know, but yeah, no. There's no excuse for having seen that film, though, so I'm gonna make this, once again, one of my Point of Pride movies.
Okay. I'm 93, The Untold Story.
Nope.
Nope. 94, Aftermath.
Another one where the title rings a bell, but I haven't seen it. What's that one about?
It is a beautifully shot film about a coroner who mutilates and sexually violates the corpse of an attractive young woman and then feeds her heart to his dog.
And why does he do this?
Well, you don't really know.
Oh, okay.
It's a silent film.
Oh, so it's one of those pretentious art things that's supposed to mean something.
I don't know if that's really the case.
Okay.
I remember reading about this film a while ago, and I could barely make it through.
And is it like, is it a short?
I think it's probably like 70 minutes.
It's a silent film with 70 minutes of corpse molestation.
I think. I don't know how long it is, I'm guessing, but yes. But there's
no plot.
Well, no,
just corpse molestation.
Well, he's a medical examiner, and then he molests the corpse.
You know, one time, I remember Merman and I were joking about how, you know, just one of the worst, we were trying to, you know, worst things someone could do, and we would always joke that, you know, low-budget filmmakers were just guys who would gather in a room, four guys to do in a room together, and where they would, to use the vernacular, blank a dead dog's corpse, and that would be the movie. And apparently, Aftermath, it proves that we were not that far off in our judgment of terrible filmmakers.
Well, I mean, there are lots of films about necrophilia. I think this one is just sort
more
of the
extreme,
more
the most
extreme. Yeah.
Okay.
Haven't, but I mind you, I'd also like to make it clear that I haven't seen a lot of films about necrophilia.
Okay, so I'm going to beat you again really by saying I haven't seen any films about necrophilia.
You didn't see Kissed?
I did Kissed not see Kissed.
That is, in fact, the only film I've seen about necrophilia.
Now, that's am I wrong, or is that the impossibly pretentious film about pedophilia?
Necrophilia,
thank you. There's actually a lot of impossibly pretentious films about pedophilia. You see The Woodman? The Woodsman?
No, I keep picking it up when I'm at the video store and then putting it back on the shelf.
Yeah, impossibly pretentious.
Okay.
All right, keep going.
1997. Kichiku.
Nope.
Or Kichiku. I'm not sure how to pronounce this.
I don't think it's important how you pronounce it.
Well, I want to do it justice.
That's fair.
2000. Versus.
That is one that I'm actually desperate to see, but I've never got the opportunity
to. 2001. Itchy the Killer.
Now, I have not seen that one.
I have seen this one.
Yes.
All right. Go
you
me.
Win again.
Yeah, this was hard to get through. Like, I almost turned it off. And that's saying a lot because...
You watch a lot of disturbing stuff.
I watch a lot of disturbing stuff, exactly.
Are you recommending that I should take a pass on this one?
Because
I really enjoyed The Great Yokai War. Is it another one of his children's films?
No. No, it isn't.
Okay.
At all. It's totally weird. Well, yeah. It kind of goes with that saying.
Yeah. Well, it's Takashi Mike, so.
Yeah, give it a try, actually. Yeah. It's worth watching.
Okay.
If not, but, just to sort of push your own limits.
Prepare to be unsettled.
Yes. And thoroughly confused.
Well, those are two of my favorite things to be.
2001. Plague Zombie Mutant Zone.
I have not seen Plague Zombie Mutant Zone.
Okay. 2003. High Tension. I wonder why they give it its English title and not its French title.
Because Switchblade Romance. Oh, no. High Tension is its English title. Thinking of its
UK
title.
Yeah, but why not call it Haute Tension?
Because this is an English magazine.
Yeah, but they give the Japanese movies a Japanese name.
Those were never released theatrically in North America, though.
Anyway.
Also, it's a director. I mean, come on. Haute
Tension. Yeah, but it's a Canadian magazine.
It is. You're right. They don't have an excuse. But I just want to go on the record here. We're not going to make this about High Tension, but it's the worst damn movie ever made.
Oh, that's not true. You and I both know that isn't true.
Okay, we both know that isn't true. We did spend the first half hour of this talking about the worst damn movie ever made, but it's up there.
I have yet to see it, so it is this is really okay. All the counts.
I'm not going to spoil it for you, but...
You already did.
I did, actually. Prepare for it to suck even harder than I intimated it sucks.
Well, see, I don't know, because now I've set the bar so low that it might not be possible for it to be worse than what I expect.
You know what? It's a movie where you watch the whole movie and then you find out that none of the movie happened. I'm sorry, but how can it get worse than that? Explain to me a way in which an experience watching a movie is going to be worse than that. Oh, no, that movie you just watched? No, that didn't happen.
Oh, what about where the movie you just watched, it turns out the whole movie is just a preamble for a sequel that you're not going to see.
That is the second worst thing.
Because that's pretty bad.
That is pretty bad. I'll give you that. Okay, what's next?
2005, Cannibal.
No.
It is a grueling fictionalized account of a crime committed in 2001. Oh, yes.
You've seen
I
this?
Wanted to see this. No, I wanted to. This is about the German guy who was looking for someone to kill and eat.
Oh, yeah. That they make jokes about all the time.
This is the movie about that.
Wow.
Gorgeous and utterly revolting, it says.
The, like, really unsettling movies about... Yeah, cannibal fetishists.
Mm-hmm.
Yikes.
Yeah, okay. 2006, The Hills Have Eyes.
Of course. We saw that together, so we both get a point on that one.
We did.
Okay.
Are you sure?
Yeah, we went to the theater and saw that in theaters.
Was Marina there?
Yes, she was.
Okay. All right, I am remembering correctly.
Okay.
That was good.
Yeah, I know you enjoyed that.
Because you were there.
I remember. And you remember I had a different feeling about it than from the one you did.
Yeah, so we're not going to talk about that.
That's, again, a conversation for another day.
2007. August Underground's Penance.
No.
Okay, 2007. Mother of Tears.
Psyched about it, but haven't seen it yet.
Okay, and the last one, again, 2007. Inside. I think that sigh says it all.
Well, you know what? I recorded 17 minutes on my feelings towards Inside, so I don't think I need to repeat 1 second of them here. The sigh will have to do it.
All right, and that's it. That's 50.
That is 50. I got to say, so the final tally is, and I hope you folks at home have been playing along, Count Vargelon, 14,
oh,
or a little less than a third, to Dive Mistress's 3 1/2, which is a 15th.
Oh.
I know. You did terribly.
I did. It's a little embarrassing.
I would say a lot.
I really like to pride myself in knowing a lot about horror movies.
Yeah, but apparently that doesn't translate into knowing a lot about gorer movies.
Although, I suppose I could know a lot about these films without actually having seen them.
Yeah, that's what pathetic people who are trying to cover for their lack of knowledge say.
Oh, no.
I know. That was horrible.
Well, I guess I'll add these to the list.
To the queue.
The ever-growing list
of things you need to see.
I have to watch.
Okay. So, I believe that is it for the AVOD this week.
Yeah.
It has been great being here with you, the studio audience.
Pleasure. Always a pleasure.
If you'd like to send us a comment or a question, you can do so at the AVOD's official email address, vargulon@gmail.com. That's vardulon@gmail.com. And as always, you can reach our blogs, both Castle Vargelon at vargelon.blogspot.com. I'm not going to spell it again this time.
And you can read about my informed opinions at zombots.blogspot.com.
As always, it's been great, and we will see you next time here on the AVOD.
Good night.